Joining us now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline is former Major League player, manager, and analyst who is currently serving as the Executive Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. Follow him on Twitter, at Bobby Valentine. Bobby Valentine joins the show. Bobby, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Okay, guys, I'm doing great. How's the weather down there in beautiful Texas?
Don't want to rub it in, Bobby, but it is in the upper 60s, low 70s right now and totally sunny, not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah, my son lives in Texas. He said it was a little, he's over in Dallas. He said it was a little chilly this morning, but it was going to be a nice day. And you guys are lucky. We have snow.
Oh, man, oh. Snow. See, I used to live in Chicago, Bobby, and snow in March, April, occasionally in May, that is never okay.
No, that's never okay.
Well,
yeah.
Bobby, we were at spring training with the Texas Rangers last week, and your name came up because you are still fondly thought of in the Texas Rangers organization. We spoke with a couple of your former players, including Gino Petrolli, so we thought we would try to reach out to you just to see how things are going nowadays. And also, I guess to start out this interview, Bobby, what emotions are stirred at this time of year for you as somebody whose career involves much more than just baseball at this point, but every year around spring training, do you find yourself feeling the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. It's the, you know, the rebirth. It's a new season, new faces and new places. It's always fun to deal with spring training and all the excitement that all 30 teams have looking forward to a new season.
And you were drafted the fifth overall pick, I believe, in the 1968 draft. Was that year or the year after, was that your very first spring training? Or what is your first spring training memory?
Wow, my first spring training was probably that in 69. Yeah, but I don't have that much of a memory. I was in school at University of Southern California. We had a spring break and got to do 10 days of running down in the spring training and running after the ball and then getting back for classes. So it's a bit of a blur, but, you know, Florida was always spectacular at Dodger Town when I was a young player. And then that evolved to helping the Rangers build a complex in Port Charlotte after moving out of Pompano and helping the Mets establish a place in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and then actually opening up the new Red Sox spring training complex in Fort Myers. So spring training was always a fun and exciting time for me.
And now you're speaking a lot about experience in Florida for spring training. Did you ever have a chance to spend any springs in Arizona with the Cactus League?
Well, the only time I did, I was a player with the California Angels and also San Diego Padres, I guess, back in 77. But the Angels had a unique situation where the old cowboy there Southern California was Gene Autry, who was a movie star baseball owner, and he had a fabulous resort hotel in Palm Springs, California. We had a spring training complex with, multitude of four fields over in a place called Brawley, California, and they had nothing but a few baseballs and a whole bunch of sugar beets, as I remember it. But we did 3 weeks of early training there, and then when the season started, the spring season, we would play games in Palm Springs and then go over to Phoenix and Tucson. So, I did a little of the Cactus League, but it's changed so much since then. 15 teams there now, all within, an hour and a half drive. It's really a pleasant place to enjoy February and March, that's for sure.
Bobby, before we get back into some baseball memories and some questions, I've got to ask how you're doing right now. I mean, you've been at Sacred Heart for 5-6 years now, and how are things going? You enjoying your time there? What's it like being an athletic director?
Well, you know, we have 32 Division I sports and 800 Division I athletes, 90 or so Division I coaches, so it's quite exciting. There's something new happening every day. I've enjoyed the transition. I really enjoyed learning a whole new paradigm, and every day that I could maybe help a coach get a little better, or help a player get a little more well-rounded, it just brightens up my day.
Was there a part of that job, Bobby, that was the most difficult for you to adjust to after a life in baseball?
Well, it's a major adjustment to go from the real world to higher ed. And, you know, the higher ed has their own way of operating, and the NCAA has their own way of operating. So, yeah, there was a real steep learning curve, but luckily, I've had great people around me, great assistants and great coaches and great administrative staff to help me through my transition. And we have a terrific Division I program going at Sacred Heart University now.
Bobby Valentine joining us right now, longtime baseball guy, player, manager, analyst, currently serving as the athletic director at Sacred Heart. We're talking some spring training with Bobby. And Mr. Valentine, Skipper, we had Reese Ryan on the show last week. He is the owner and CEO of the Round Rock Express currently. And we had asked him last week if he was ever starstruck. Of course, his dad, Nolan, was a big part of those Texas Rangers teams when he was hanging out for spring training. And he admitted that the one time he was ever starstruck was when Jose Canseco joined the team. So I have two questions for you. First off, back during your first spring trainings in the late 60s and early 70s, did you ever find yourself starstruck?
I don't think I did. You know, when you're a young player, you always think you belong. And, you know, I was a cocky guy. I thought I was better than all the stars. But I enjoyed going out to watch, you know, Roberto Clemente and Hank Aaron and all the guys that I had heard about. Before I signed, of course, I met Mickey Mantle when I was in high school. I was starstruck then, but these are names of the past. You know, when you talk about the Ryan boys, though, I want to tell you that they're responsible for Nolan Ryan being a Texas Ranger, because it was Ruth Ryan during the winter meetings when Nolan became a free agent who met with me, and I, you know, I was a teammate of Nolan's back in the early 70s, and now I'm going to be his manager in the late 80s. And Ruth came to me and said, you know, you guys aren't going to offer the most money out there, but if you could let my boys go into your clubhouse, because at that time, if you could imagine, children weren't allowed in clubhouses. You know, most people had very strict regulations about having the fathers and the sons hang out at all during the workday. But Ruth Ryan said, if you could let my boys be in there with their papa during some of the days, you might be able to convince us to sign with the Texas Rangers. And I said, you know, it's funny about that, Ruth. I just established a new policy that kids are allowed in the clubhouse.
Wow. How about that?
Texas Ranger, yeah.
That's really
what a story.
That's really cool. And Risa talked about how at one point... Oh, go ahead.
Ryan, yeah.
Risa talked about how at one point how Jose had asked him to go grab a bunch of burgers from Wendy's and McDonald's or something like that, and actually thrown the keys to his Lamborghini to Reese to take into the drive-thru. But Nolan caught wind of it and grabbed the keys and gave him the keys to the old pickup truck. But I guess I have to ask, since he is one of the more charismatic, memorable dudes in baseball history, much less from that era, what are some of your fondest memories from managing Jose Canseco?
Well, you know, actually, guys, he came right after I left. I was in the Gino Petralli era,
okay.
You know. So Gino was my big star. I had him and Ruben Sierra and Pete Icavilla and, of course, Nolan. But I left, and I guess it was 90-something, 92 or 93, and Jose came in soon after that.
Wow,
I would have
okay.
loved to have managed him. Hell, He single-handedly, a couple of those years, kept the Rangers from getting to the playoffs. You know, there wasn't a wild card selection then. You had to win the division to get to the playoffs, and Oakland was bigger and badder than the Rangers just about every year we played. And I wish I had that bat in my order and that charismatic pragmatic type of personality on my bench.
Bobby, I guess same question for Nolan Ryan. You already gave us a great story about Nolan Ryan, but from your time managing Nolan at the end of his career, any fond memories from working with him?
Well, I have all fond memories. You know, I played center field in his first no-hitter, and then I was lucky enough to manage his sixth and seventh no-hitter, his 5,000th strikeout, his 300th win. And all of those games were incredibly memorable. But, you know, the 5,000th strikeout was rather unique in that it's one of those baseball moments that was actually predictable. He had 4,999 strikeouts, and all he needed was one more to get to 5,000. So, you know, when he got two strikes on the batter, everyone was standing, everyone was cheering, and everyone had their camera out ready to snap that Kodak moment. And unbeknownst to the players on the field and coaches in the dugout, as Nolan threw that 3-2 pitch and let the ball go, the entire old Arlington Stadium lit up like one big flashbulb where everyone was taking a photo at the same time. I almost fell off the step I was standing on. I was shocked by the brightness of this impact of cameras. And remarkably, with the count 3-2, Nolan's 96-mile-an-hour high fastball thrown to Ricky Henderson was fouled off. And I thought that was one of the most brilliant moments in all of my spectating, where I, you know, was shocked and Ricky was able to foul off this this fastball on a 3-2 count with all those flashlights going on. He stepped out of the box. He kicked the dirt out of his spikes. Nolan walked down off the mound, as he often did, kind of stared in at Ricky, and it might have even been Gino Petrolli behind the plate, walked back to the mound, threw another 96-mile-an-hour fastball, and Ricky swung and missed for the 5,000 strikeout. So, you know, that amongst many other great moments were, and, you know, they're indebted in my memory.
Wow, really cool. Yeah. Bobby Valentine joining us right now, talking some baseball and more. And Bobby, speaking of Nolan stepping off the mound and taking a few seconds to really gather himself, there's been lots of conversation this offseason about speeding up the game. Do you think that the game needs sped up? And is there maybe a solution that people haven't really talked enough about yet in terms of taking a couple minutes off of each baseball game?
Well, coincidentally, when I was with Nolan Ryan back in 1973, okay, now get your calendar out, that is, you know, a couple of years back, I got traded over to the then California Angels, and they decided to do, for the first time and only time, hire a collegiate manager who is never in professional baseball to manage their team. So Bobby Winkles came from Arizona State University, where he had guys like Rick Monday and Reggie Jackson and Sal Bando play for him and win national championships at the collegiate level. He stepped into the Major League office, and his soapbox in 1973, what he wanted to bring to the Major Leagues and change for the betterment of the game, was the speed-up rules. And he had a whole list of speed-up rules to make the game better. And, you know, people make me laugh sometimes when they think it's a new situation. All of a sudden, it's this new generation that wants the game sped up. Well, maybe Bobby Winkles was looking into the future, or maybe he just realized that the trips to the mound and the idea of brushing yourself off when you slide into a base and walking out into the outfield to do it, or walking up the line after you swing and miss to talk to yourself for 15 minutes, isn't really part of the game. So I think it's just everyone having a cognizant awareness that, you know, people are there to watch action, to watch the play. They're not there to see someone fix the chain in their in their shirt or dust off their pants or even fix their batting glove, which, you know, does happen in between pitches often and doesn't necessarily slow up the game. But I think this idea of limiting the trips to the mound is a good idea. For 20 years, I was a proponent of 2 trips to the mound per pitcher per game instead of 2 trips to the mound per pitcher per inning is what they had in the past. Wow. And I never thought that players should go to the mound and talk to the pitcher. You know, I didn't think that the coach should go out to the mound and coach the pitcher during the at-bat or the game. My gosh, we never saw the bases loaded in a 3-2 count and someone calling timeout and running out from the dugout to go talk to the hitter. So why would we allow people to go to the mound all the time and talk to the pitcher? The greatest competition in all of sport is the pitcher versus the hitter, and it should be mano a mano. It should not be timeout. I have to go calm this guy down or tell him what pitch to throw. I think he should stand on his own.
Interesting philosophy. I like that one a whole lot. And Skip, I have to ask you about this as well, because you just mentioned the impromptu rule that you created while speaking with Ruth Ryan, allowing kids into the clubhouse. At one point during your Texas Rangers days, did you have to institute a no Tigers rules in the clubhouse on behalf of Julio Franco?
As a matter of fact, you know, he had that tiger cub one day, brought the darn thing into the clubhouse. It was as cute as could be, but you could see the strength of its paws, and he had a few of them, I guess, in his backyard over in North Arlington. But, you know, after he brought it one time, we did make a rule just for the safety of a player. I didn't want that one on my watch. Fourth place hitter can't play because his eyes poked out by the tiger. Hey, Julio Franco is another one of those amazing, amazing people. His body was his temple. He played, as you know, up until I think last year when maybe he was 55. He came over to Japan after winning a batting title in the American League, was supposedly washed up when I got to Japan in the mid-90s. He played every day for my team there, came in second in the batting title in Japan to a guy named Ichiro Suzuki, and, you know, went on to play in the major leagues another 10 years and play until he was well over 50 years old. So he was really an amazing, and is an amazing person, but was really an amazing player.
Bobby, just a couple more for you, and we really appreciate the time. This has been a fun conversation, but you started talking about Japan, and you spent a couple of stints over there as a manager. I've got to ask you about your time. I mean, do you still keep in touch with some of your former players? Do you ever make it back over to Japan? What was your experience like over there?
Oh, yeah, I spent, you know, a tenth of my life over there. I was there for 7 years, and it was spectacular. You know, they love baseball. I love baseball. There was a great commonality of spirit, and I thought that I'm still in touch with many of the guys. Yes, I'd still go back, and I'll watch a game, or I'll take guys to dinner. It was just one of those special, lucky situations that I was able to do, to be the first non-Japanese manager to ever manage there, to win a championship there, to have a street named after me, to have a ticker tape parade. The whole nine yards was a very, very good chapter or two of my life.
Bobby, before we let you go, I've got to ask you about the disguise. I can't let you go without asking about this. Back in 1999, when you were ejected for arguing a call and came back into the Mets dugout an inning later wearing the fake mustache and the T-shirt. Unfortunately, I think this is a crime against you that you were fined and suspended for a couple of games. But I got to ask your thought process or the logic or what went into that decision, and how many times do you hear about it even till this day?
Yeah, I think that's my 15 seconds of fame. It's my only connection to some generations of baseball. You know, it's just one of those things. It was impromptu, and the team needed a little levity, and we got it. There were a lot of smiles. There was some laughter. There was a base hit to win the game. Regretfully, as is the situation today in the game of baseball, it wasn't appreciated for what it was, and some guys with button-down collars and frowns on their forehead decided that I was disrespecting the game, fined me $10,000, suspended me a few games, almost cost me my job. But it was all trying to loosen up the team and make a tough situation during a ball game a little lighter. And we need more of that. We need more entertainment on the field. We don't need less entertainment. We don't need to have everyone look exactly the same when they hit a home run. And we don't need everyone to look exactly the same, in my opinion, when they strike someone out. I think that it's a fun game. It's an emotional game. And the emotion that people feel should be felt by the fans. And I think if the fans were able to feel more of that emotion, some of those dead times wouldn't feel so dead, and they'd look forward to the next moment of ecstasy.
There are a couple of things that separate baseball from the other major sports. It includes that playfulness that you were just describing, and also the storytelling ability as well, right, Bobby?
I think so. I think, when it is such a tough game to play and to not be able to share it with others what it's really like. And many of the guys don't articulate it well, so they have to communicate through their actions. And I think we just need to allow them to be a little more real and a little less stoic when they play the great game of baseball.
No doubt about that. Yeah. Well, Bobby, I have very fond memories from going with my family late 80s and early 90s to watching your Texas Rangers teams play after we stopped at Bobby V's for a meal, of course. And I took my fansmanship as far as ruining my own Little League career by trying to imitate Ruben Sierra and that high leg kick from both sides of the plate, too. So just know that I really appreciate the time that you spent in Arlington. And thank you so much for the time today. So really appreciate it. Hopefully we can have you on again sometime
soon. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Bobby.
You guys are kind to think of me. Thanks for reaching out. Let's go baseball. Have fun.
Thank you. You too.
Take
best of luck,
Bobby.
At Sacred Heart. Awesome.